Most likely to have been a warning for me.
He considers it worth it is when somebody has lost a loved one.
That doesn't necessarily mean that that person is not connecting with God.
Well, people might actually find the truth if he put his foot in it, then hey.
These things can be very difficult to get out of for people that are being, you know, attacked or oppressed in those ways.
Come to him just as you are, cry out for help, the help will come.
The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Oz Table Talk. My name is Luke and I'm here at the table with the ever grinning Dave and the ever, what are you doing, Ben?
He just raised his eyebrows when you said that.
Yes, that's right. The eyebrow raising Ben. Wait a second, that has different meanings, doesn't it? Anyway, welcome to the show, guys.
And, hello, my name is Luke.
Your name is Luke. No, that's ridiculous. My name is Luke. So, how are you guys doing? What's news?
I finished all my exams. That's the best news of my week.
That is fantastic. Congratulations. year one down, right?
Well, you know, fingers crossed. I have to pass everything for that to be the case. And yeah. I think I should have. Hmm.
How long before
I
you find out?
Pretty well. A couple of weeks, usually, before they certify the grades. So.
Okay. What about you, Ben?
Not too much this week. I got a couple of new clients, which was nice.
Oh, nice.
But apart from that, not too much.
Okay.
Can we just talk about Ben's shirt for a minute?
Go for it.
I just think, you know, the audience can't see it, but Ben, what do you think Ben looks like he's ready to go and do at the moment, Luke?
Melissa calls this my dad shirt.
Yeah, the reason that I'm laughing is not because of what you look like, but I couldn't think of anything else. The very first thing that came into my head is is that you look like you're about to go bobsledding.
Bobsledding? Wow, okay.
I have no even reason to say that. It's just that's all I could think of to say, and so eventually that took over and I couldn't stop laughing. I'm sorry.
No. I don't even think they did bobsledding in polo shirts in Cool Runnings, man.
This is true.
I just think Ben looks like he's ready to go out and play golf right now.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Don't you think that's a classic golfing shirt?
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
And yeah, I get the dad thing, Ben. That's, you know, dad shirts and golfing shirts are one and the same.
My sister just took one look at it and laughed at me.
Yep. Sarah has forbidden me from wearing shirts with horizontal stripes for that very reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
Well, I was seeing a client today. I'm just like, this ages me a bit. That's actually a good thing in my profession.
That's so funny that you go to your wardrobe and you're like, now what's going to age me?
I'm just waiting to get a little bit more salt and then I can... Then all my clients should be happy, because the one thing I have found with clients is if you look like you're in your mid-20s, they don't trust what you got to say.
Yeah. Well, I had I used to have a pastor who, I mean, when I knew him, he was in his 60s, so he was obviously not a young man, but he's got a very young kind of look to him, and he said that he grew, like, in his words, I grew an Osama bin Laden style beard for most of my early ministry because no one believed that I was old enough to be a pastor, and everyone treated me, you know, more like one of the youth of the church rather than someone who was actually a spiritual leader. He said, we had our second child, and he said, I literally went into the shop to buy a new car seat because we needed two for the car now. And when I bought the car seat, the cashier said to me, oh, that's nice. Are you buying this for your little brother? And he's like, yeah, no, I'm 30, whatever I am, and I've got two kids. Like, leave me alone. But yeah, no, so it's a real thing. You know, if people don't think that you're old enough to be doing whatever profession that you have, it's a real problem.
Can I just point out how funny that is, that people wouldn't trust him until he grew a beard and looked like a terrorist?
Yeah, well, you got to remember that by the time he was wearing that beard, terrorists weren't in fashion yet. 9/11 hadn't happened. So,
oh, I see.
Yeah. Anyway, before we get actually to what we're talking about tonight, as is our habit, we do our Humans of Adventism question of the week. And this week's question is, what is the longest trip you've taken? And I guess I'm leaving that up for interpretation, like whether that's amount of time or distance or whatever. But what is it for you guys?
Time and distance. A month-long road trip through southeast Queensland going into northeast New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
I think I went as far south as about Dubbo.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, basically from Bundy to Dubbo, I stopped at quite a lot of different places, saw a lot of different things. It was quite a good trip.
Nice.
Nice. You must have stopped at quite a lot of places to do that in a month.
Yeah, there's such good bushwalking in that region, particularly around the hinterlands near the Gold Coast. It's absolutely gorgeous through there.
Hmm.
Yeah, nice. Did you go to the Blue Mountains while you were down that way?
I did not, actually.
Ah.
That's still on my list of things to do.
That's not far enough down, Dave. Dubbo's not far enough down there.
Dubbo's very close to the Blue Mountains, actually.
Mm.
It's just on the western side of it.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, because it depends on your perspective, of course. You know, if you're looking from Dubbo toward the Blue Mountains, it's going to feel like a long way away. I get you, but
yeah.
If you're driving in a car, not so much.
Yeah, this is true.
But yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, interesting little bit of Dubbo. I went down. I saw the zoo at Dubbo.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend it to anyone. It's fantastic. Mm. And they also have the worst tasting of all the town water along that trip. It was dreadful.
So,
I actually had to go out and buy bottled water. I couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the tourism advert from Ben. Go to the zoo. It's fantastic, but buy bottled water.
Yep.
Or lots of cordial.
Uh-huh.
Right.
What about you, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, depends on distance or hours. I'm going to go with hours, because obviously in a plane you can go a long way in a short time.
Mm.
But I was thinking of straight driving, Ben, so I haven't really considered road trips, which potentially could be longer than this, but
mm-hmm.
The longest straight drive that I've done personally, I actually looked them up, and they're both exactly, you know, within cooey of each other. That's such an Aussie thing.
I was going to say, they're both exactly within cooey of each other. You know, for anybody listening who has no idea what that means, you want to help them out?
Yeah, so they're fairly similar, the length of these two trips. And I haven't even said where they are yet. This is how far I'm beating around the bush, mm-hmm. to use another slang. So basically, the two trips, Bundaberg to Sydney once. I did that when I was not living in Bundaberg. And I actually had three passengers, all of which could drive, none of which did drive because they were all sleeping on me. I mean, sleeping in the car, not on me. But
that would
anyway,
be very convenient, yep.
So that was kind of a long drive because it was like started, I reckon mid-morning and didn't get there until very, very late at night. And then the other one was much the same length, but from a place called Rowlands Plains, where I used to live, down to Melbourne in Victoria. And I think I probably did that trip quicker, even though it's about the same distance. So I'll let you figure out how that happened rather than incriminating myself.
Uh-huh. I've been in the car with you, Dave. I'm not surprised.
All right, we can edit that out. I was just going to say, and that, by the way, that trip was to go down to AYC, which, you know, you and I, at least, Luke, have fond memories of. I don't think you've ever been to AYC, have you, Ben?
No, I haven't.
Because we probably would have met there.
Yeah.
Because that's everybody meets everybody at AYC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was a cool trip. Rollins Plains to Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
And that one I did the opposite way around. I left in the middle of the night and I got there late the next day.
Yep. Cool. Well, for me, it would be, again, it depends whether we're measuring distance or we're measuring time spent. But distance-wise, flew from Brisbane to Adelaide to visit friends down there, which, you know, if you're not familiar with Australian geography, that's kind of like, you know, halfway across the country. And
Because that's going to help them if they're not familiar with Australian geography.
Okay, well, Australia's a big place, about the same size as the continental United States, and, you know, it's like travelling halfway across that. If you're familiar with American geography, if you're not, well, then I'm sorry that you're kind of up the creek without a paddle. Okay.
Sorry to derail you. Keep going.
Yeah, so that was awesome. That was a really great trip. But, you know, if we're talking time-wise, as far as, like, time away from home, then, yeah, we went for... we did a road trip down to wedding and visit family in 2018, so in New South Wales. So, again, similar distance to what you were talking about, Dave. So, I don't know, like, 14-hour drive, something like that, down there. But we went down and we stayed down there for, like, a month and just sort of visited everyone that we wanted to visit and then, you know, made our way back up. We were away for about a month, so that's probably the longest time was. So, to get back to the point of this particular episode, we are dealing actually with an audience question. So, this is a question that came from Marion, and we actually have a little bit of audio from Marion, which we'll play for you so you can hear her question.
Hi everyone, my name is Marion, and I am serving as a volunteer missionary in East Timor. The question I have is, some people... they experience spiritual warfare and others don't. And by spiritual warfare, I mean having experiences with ghosts. Does that determine our relationship with God? Does it tell us if we are far away from Him or we are closer to Him? Thank you.
So thank you so much, Marion. I really appreciate you reaching out with that question. And I will say, if anyone's listening and there's a topic that you want us to deal with, please just use the voice recorder on your phone, record it, and email it to us. You can send it to hello@oztabletalk.com.au, and we would love to make an episode around it. So having said that, let's talk about Marion's question.
Can we just say as well, good on you for going and doing mission work over there. That's fantastic.
Yes, yes. Now, East Timor is a mission field that you don't hear a lot about, and I'm sure, you know, if you live in different parts of the world, you hear about different mission fields, but East Timor is one that I can't say I've heard a lot about, so...
Yeah.
Mm. Even though it's right on our doorstep.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's true. So, interesting question from Marion. I think there's lots of different elements to this question, isn't there? Like, I sense maybe an element of uncertainty about... maybe her own spiritual experience, which maybe we can comment on and just provide a word of encouragement for. But before we do that, what do you think Marion is actually asking in this question? Let's sort of go for some definitions.
When she's talking about spiritual warfare, she clarifies that by saying it's like ghosts. And so when I think ghosts, you know, this is supernatural things where there are spiritual forces that are somehow attacking or oppressing us. And I think it's an interesting thing because it's something that I would assume anyway that perhaps a lot of people do experience, but a lot of people don't. And so I think the question that's perhaps behind the question there is, or perhaps the core of the question is around, what does that say about the spiritual condition of the person who's having the experience?
And can I just point out as well that, you know, a lot of our listeners are probably in Western countries. And like us who live in a Western country, I think we have a far less black and white interaction with the spirit world than you do in developing countries like, you know, maybe East Timor, or I know for me when I went to the Solomon Islands and Vanuatu, those two countries, it's very, very clear over there. The spiritual element. Whereas, you know, in Australia or in the States or Europe or, you know, some of those more Western countries where our lives, I think the devil's got plenty of ways to get at us without actually necessarily introducing himself.
Yeah.
And so he just sort of relies upon those things and we don't necessarily face it as much.
But do you blame him for choosing that path in these sorts of countries? Because we're very atheistic and any sort of spiritual good or bad starts to raise questions of, is there something out there other than atheism? And, well, people might actually find the truth if he put his foot in it then, eh?
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. Mm.
I like that.
Have you guys ever had any experience, though? I guess what I was leading to is, have you guys ever had any experience a bit like what Marion's talking about? Or are we sort of living in that little bubble that we're speaking of where it doesn't really happen to us very much here?
For me, I've only had one experience that I would say falls into that category, and it was actually, it's funny you mentioned AYC before, Dave. It was actually just before I went to AYC that I had the experience. And it was at night. It was a dream that I had, and you know, to call it a dream, it seems to be somehow minimizing it. But it was probably one of the most scary things that I've ever experienced. You know, in the dream, I dreamt that I was at AYC, and at AYC, you know, you do door knocking, so you know you're offering people Bible studies and that. And I was aware that that was what was going to happen, but in the dream, I was doing that, and there was this guy that I was going with, and he was a really tall. I don't know if he's Maori or Samoan or Islander, Polynesian guy anyway. That I was partnered with to go, and in the dream we approached the house and the door opened, and this little old lady opened the door, but that, like, it was obviously you know, it was demonic, it was, you know, spiritual. And I still remember the feelings that came over me in the dream, and, you know, not being able to call for help and all of that sort of stuff. But in the dream, in the end, you know, I was able to eventually ask God for help, and he did in the dream. But the terror that was associated with that, it was more real than any dream I've had in my entire life. I am very confident, at least as confident as one can be when we're talking about things that are as immeasurable as this. I'm as confident as you could be that it was something spiritual. It wasn't something that was just a bad dream. That was from my experience. And the thing that was really weird is that when I went to AYC and I was in that scenario, I actually saw the same, like, the Polynesian guy that was in the dream looked very similar to a guy that was actually on the team, and I didn't end up pairing with him. I paired with someone else, so that was intentional. But, you know, since then, I've always thought that that was most likely to have been a warning for me, you know, whether something bad was going to happen. I don't know. But, yeah, that's the only experience that I've ever had that I can think of anyway.
Yeah, right.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't really had any of that sort of experience. Although my grandfather once told me about a... he was working with a family who had just started coming interested in Christianity, and they'd been involved in the occult.
Mm.
And one day he turned up to do the Bible study with them, and there's this great big dog sitting on the veranda just barking, and it went to go for him, and instead of stepping back, what do you do with a dog that's vicious? You put the boot into it.
Mm.
He went to boot it, foot went straight through it. It wasn't there, it just disappeared after that.
My nan had some experiences after my dad passed away, and then also when my granddad passed away as well. And I think I was just thinking about what you said earlier, Ben, about how, you know, maybe the devil doesn't want to introduce this sort of stuff in a Western country because it might actually awaken some sort of spiritual quest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe the time where that's potentially, he considers it worth it, is when somebody has lost a loved one and they're already sort of seeking something out.
Mm.
And so he provides, you know, a false experience, which leads them away from, you know, a hope in a resurrection or something like that to, you know, perceive that they can still communicate with their dead loved one or whatever. So, yeah, I guess what we're saying is that there are loads of ways in which we can encounter the spiritual world.
Mm.
But like we're saying, we don't have a lot of personal experience with it.
Mm. Yeah, which makes it... In one sense, it makes it difficult for us to address, but I think the core of the question, I think, is very, very much a biblical question, right? And that asking those questions around what evidence it has for our condition. And I think, you know, both Dave and Ben, you know, you mentioned the difference based on culture. And I actually think that is probably one of the most significant issues here, because the question that Marion was asking about whether, what does that say about someone's relationship to God? You know, if they're seeing apparitions and ghosts and that sort of thing, does that mean that they're close to God and they're being attacked because of that? Or does it mean that they're far away from him and therefore Satan has access to them? I think a lot of it does come down to, like you're saying, Ben, how Satan is attacking someone that is from that culture or in that way. And I don't think it has anything to do with the person's connection to God or Christianity. I think it has a lot to do with what particular toolkit Satan is using for that person. If he can get you most effectively by, you know, secularism and vice, then that's what he's going to do. If he can get you best by ancestor worship and ghosts and apparitions, then that's what he's going to do. I think it's just another tool in his kit that we need to be aware of.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that.
Can I just say that I think Marianne's question seems to me, and, you know, I could be misinterpreting her, so, you know, whatever, but I think a word of encouragement is you know, a good thing in either case. But it seems to indicate that maybe she's questioning her own closeness with God based upon the fact that she hasn't had these encounters that the people she's close to have. And it sounds like she's maybe wondering, like, am I doing something wrong that the devil doesn't necessarily, you know, isn't attacking me in this way? And I just think it would be well for us to just encourage her that that's absolutely not what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the devil will, you know, attack you in a special way when you're close to God, kind of Job-esque. He attacked Job because Job was faithful. But then you've also got loads of accounts in Scripture where the devil attacks people when they're down. Think of all the demon-possessed people that Jesus encountered. They were possessed by the devil because they had left themselves open to that possession, yeah? Not because they were especially close to God, and so he was like, oh, I need to do something about this. So I don't think it needs to be an indicator for you, Marion, as to your closeness with God. I think that we don't really understand the spirit world, so I'm not going to pretend to know, you know, what the devil does and why he does it. But I definitely don't think that, you know, God is like, I value this child more because they have had to deal with the devil face to face or anything like that, if that makes sense. I don't feel like it does, but hopefully it makes some sense.
If I can throw this out there, if somebody is listening who has experienced or is currently experiencing this kind of thing, what is the appropriate response, right? Because it's certainly not something that we talk about a lot. So, you know, for people that are in that place, what is the appropriate response?
And maybe I should just clarify, because I was speaking specifically to Marion, who hasn't had that experience. Because you have doesn't mean that you're not close to God either. You know, as I was just sharing, it can go either way. But yeah, what can we do about it? Well, I think having God as our refuge is the ultimate answer, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Because when it comes to dealing with those situations, our closeness to God matter. Because ultimately, we've got no chance against demons. God is our protector. He's our shelter in all things, and especially with this. And he has the power to deal with any situation like that comes up.
Yeah.
If I can also say that, you know, when we're looking at our lives and, you know, just like we were saying before, Satan has many ways of attacking people. This is only just one of them. But I was just thinking, you know, when people are struggling with an addiction or something like that, that is, you know, what we could possibly call a besetting sin, right? Something that just doesn't, it's difficult to shake off. That doesn't necessarily mean that that person is not connecting with God. It doesn't mean that they're not getting closer to him. And I think this, at least from what I've heard from other people who've experienced it, you know, there's a book, if anyone's interested in this sort of thing, that is written by a guy called Roger Morno. And, you know, he has a lot of experience in this because that's the life that he came from. But I think that these things can be very difficult to get out of for people that are being, you know, attacked or oppressed in those ways. And so the fact that you are being attacked doesn't necessarily mean that you're not connecting with God correctly or whatever it means. But I would just encourage you to be consistent with that. Don't give up on your relationship with God. Continue to ask for his help and pursue that.
Because ultimately that's the only hope, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
Of freedom. Yeah. I love the fact that you're giving book recommendations so often now, bro. That's really good. I feel like in the last few weeks, there's been like two or three. It's good.
I got you to thank for that. You got me onto Audible, so I'm consuming a lot more books than I used to.
Yeah, Audible's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe they can sponsor the podcast. Audible, if you're listening.
I was about to say that. This episode was sponsored by. If only.
Yeah.
yeah, but look, so I think So what can we do about it? You just said we need to go to God and we need to go to God and we need to go to God and just not give up on going to God.
Yeah.
And how can we actually do that? Well, if you think about the people that, and I'm going to the dramatic examples, I must say. So, you know, not everyone's going to be possessed by the devil. I realize that there are different levels at which the devil will attack us, and we'll talk about that another time.
Mm.
But when you think about the way that they responded, quite often they would just cry out to God, wouldn't they? They'd be like, Jesus, help me. And that was about all they could get out before they would be thrown on the ground or whatever by the demons.
Yeah.
And that was enough.
Mm.
So I don't think you need to have any eloquence about what you say. I don't think you need to have some sort of status with God before he'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was one guy chained in a cave, pretty sure his status was pretty poor. And yet Jesus was like, yeah, got you, mate.
Yeah.
Got your back. And, you know, helped him out of his situation. And then he became one of the best missionaries Jesus had of that time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that I would like to emphasize. I mean, there are thousands of ways we could answer that question.
Mm.
But I think one thing I'd like to emphasize is come to him just as you are, cry out for help. The help will come.
Mm.
It may not come immediately. You may not have victory from whatever the struggle is that you're going through instantly. But if you cry out for help, God will help. And he'll help, and he'll help. And it may be that it takes a while, but eventually you will be free if you continue to cry out for help.
Yeah.
Definitely. And don't fall into that trap where people... Have you heard of people saying, I've got to get myself right before I come to God?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, better than meanwhile, that. Have you said it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like we can all relate to that at some point in our spiritual journey, yeah, where we felt like we have to, you know, fix things up a little before we invite Jesus in.
Yeah, definitely.
But, you know, again, the Bible is riddled with stories where Jesus came to dirty houses to come, you know, I'm speaking metaphorically.
Yes.
I'm sure you understand that. But, you know, he came to into people's lives who had not cleaned themselves up before they asked him in.
Mm.
So I don't think there's any evidence to suggest that that's necessary.
So I think we're getting close to the end. Do you guys have any final remarks?
Yeah, just want to shout out to Marion, not only for asking the question, but just for what she's doing.
Yeah.
You know, all power to you. God grant you, you know, all of his blessings to do the work where you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, obviously a field that has great importance.
Mm.
And the very fact that you're surrounded by people who are encountering, you know, the enemy in real ways probably is an indication of just how important what you're doing is. So, you know, keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we pray that, you know, God would provide you the strength to move through the, you know, navigate the tough situations that you're faced with these, you know, ghosts and apparitions and things.
It's also worth mentioning that we're working on a special episode on brutalism, and we're going to be dealing with that, talking to people who have experience in those areas. And so even though this was a shorter episode, there will be a follow-up episode coming in the future where we're going to go into a bit more detail around that. And so if you feel like we've only just scratched the surface, that's because we have. We've got more in the pipeline that's coming for that one. So if you're interested, make sure you keep a lookout for that. But if you have any other questions, any other topics you want to hear cover, as I said earlier in the episode, just let us know. We love to hear from our audience, and really speaking, that is the best kind of episodes we can make, are the ones that you guys are interested in. So we look forward to talking to you guys more, but until then, you guys have a great week, and thank you for listening. And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners, and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now,
Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/OzTableTalk, and you can give anything from even $1 a month upwards. But at different levels, there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.